This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
In this ad for the Mobile One brand, I have 30 seconds to remind you about your first time driving. Remember the feeling, the freedom, how the world felt bigger and smaller at the same time? Because you were in the driver's seat. The truth is, driving never changed. You did. You got a job, a phone, and then a phone that was also a computer with emails that could find you anywhere, and then you were trapped. But here's the good news. It's never too late to break free. Mobile One, for the love of driving. Visit loveofdriving.us/radio to learn more.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Middle Eastern Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Turul Mende, the host of the channel, and today we'll be talking to Laila Sherin Sagar about her new book, Arabic Glitch, Technoculture, Data Bodies, and Archives. Welcome to the show, Laila.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure. Thank you very much.
Let's start maybe with the first question. Can you tell us a bit about yourself? How did you came to the place where you are right now? And how did you start writing this book, basically?
Well, my background, thank you for that question. My background is I was born in Egypt, grew up in the United States primarily. And in my early young adulthood, I was in Washington, D.C., had just done a master's degree in Arab studies at Georgetown, and was writing poetry on the streets, doing in spoken word cafes, and in activist circles. It was a very lively time. This is around the end of the late 90s, early 21st century, early aughts, and a lot happened, including 9/11, including the election of 2000, when there was a discrepancy between Al Gore and George Bush, if you recall, and they had to recount the votes, all the way until the 9/11 attacks. I was in Washington, D.C. when that happened. And then, of course, the U.S. response with this global war on Iraq under false pretenses that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destructions. We went to Iraq, we went to Afghanistan, and that continued for 20 years. And here we are today, somewhat in the aftermath of all of that. So anyhow, so I started with that. I was an artist, a poet, activist in DC. And my role was in building websites. I was building websites since the early 1990s. I did a lot of graphic design. And from there, I quickly was aware of a lot of the Arab blogosphere growing online. And I wanted to archive the internet in Arabic. And so I took on a huge endeavor, went back to do an MFA, went to UCSC, where I started archiving on Gaza in 2008. That's where it started. And I called this project Arshif, R-Shif. And that is the Arabic word, or actually it's a Francophone Arabic word for archive. And that archive continues till today, but it grew to become something much larger. But after that, so that archive, and as well as my my cyborg persona, Vijay Amal, grew from that moment and at UCSC, and they were both huge projects that took me into my PhD. I continued, and then And then as an assistant professor, now associate professor at UC Santa Barbara, this book basically some people call it the tenure book, but you know, it's what came out of all of that research. Actually, I really wanted to write the book because my research is multimodal, and I do a lot of creative scholarship. Some things are in exhibitions, some things are software. They're not all textual and bound into a book. And so sometimes it's hard to get those ideas across to the multitude of audiences that I'm actually really mindfully trying to address. And so the book, I think, is a cogent way for me to explain what I've been doing and why I've been doing what I've been doing for the last few decades, and also to theorize, why and what matters, and to offer a few new theoretical scaffolding for continued research, thinking, activism, making, living in this world, heavily sedatedly mediated world that we are in today.
Yes, great. Thank you so much. And coming to the book, can you maybe explain to us a bit the title, what you mean by Arabic glitch, and how it fits into your overall research, maybe?
Sure. So often we think of glitch as a negative thing. One of the previous title of this book was The Good Glitch, which I still wonder if that would have been a title, but I don't have the problem with The Good Glitch is that ontologically, epistemologically, I don't see binary, and this good bad thing just doesn't work. It just doesn't hold up. I can't hold it throughout a book, and so that's why I did it. But it's a fun play. It's a fun play. It's catchy. But it also implies, it's also taking the idea of the glitch and making it a tool, this ability, the glitch meaning that which interrupts a system, an electrical system, a media system, a political system, something that's procedural, that has a flow, right? One thing happens and then another thing happens, another thing happens. And if you interrupt the flow continues, it just glitches and it gives you something that's unintended. I call it a digital banana peel in my book. And, you know, that's what it is. Now, we think of glitches as negative because it interrupts what you intended to do. And so for the maker or the seller or, I don't know, the owner, the person behind them, this creating the system, the person for whom the system is created, not everybody, right? That's whom the system is. The systems are not created for everybody. They're created for some. And if you glitch that system, that some will not get what they expected to get. In other words, it can be used for political movements, social shifting, changes, interruptions, a shift of narrative, a shift of politics or economic, or whatever system that you're trying to deviate from. And it all sometimes offers you something beautiful. We now have something called glitch aesthetics. You probably are familiar with what glitch is. You use them on your phones. There's like a filter, one's a glitch, and it's like now it's become this aesthetic. But it looks like something's broken. Okay, so I'm basically my theorization of glitch is a complicated one. So I take this idea of the digital banana peel and I say this is a tool that activists have used in really powerful ways, from coding to political systems to cultural spaces. And all of that is political activism. All of that is the revolutionary change. It's from the technology and the politics and the art, all of that together. And glitch is a tool, is a theoretical method, procedural method of doing that. Now, I use the word Arabic because I also situate this kind of political or digital activism or political change as centered and grounded. Ground zero is the Arabic speaking world. And I use the word Arabic, not Arab, because this is very language based. A lot of the archives that I'm dealing with are social media archives that come out of a person in one part of the world, but goes through data centers around the world and disseminated on different places in very uneven ways. It's much more complicated than a place. It impacts places, but my research is really about, the book is about looking at the Arabic language and how that Arabic language is glitched. But it's also referring to the Arabic speaking world, which is within the Arab world and beyond, if that makes sense. So what I'm arguing is that this Arabic glitch is a theoretical tool that was used during the Arab uprisings of 2011 for the first time in the ways that it was picked up and used again and again in different digital movements across the world, Hong Kong, Brazil, Spain, BLM, and even I end the book with a conservative use with the January 6th Capitol riots. So that's the sort of framing I use through the title.
Yes, and while reading the book, I thought it was very complex and addressed a lot of issues. And for which audience did you had in mind while writing this book?
I think this is the most challenging part for me. That's why I have schizophrenia in the book. I have multiple voices that I use literally as a narrative technique or as a narrative method. I speak as Vijay Om Emel and I speak as myself as Layla. And then I also have this idea of the community authorship, which is everybody who's online. So on the one hand, like I said, on the one hand, I'm speaking to people in my fields. And if there are multiple fields, I would say, of course, it is media studies, Middle East studies, and art and technology or the arts more broadly, digital arts, technical media arts of practice more specifically. But also, and more importantly, that's sort of one scholarly audience, and I'm giving you the more specific which scholarly audience, but also computer scientists. It's a very transdisciplinary project. So scholars, activists and artists, practitioners, and a general audience. I think today, especially right now, I'm very aware of the fact that we are living in such a ultra saturated mediated world that people cannot not know. People cannot not know. So anybody who participates in social media, which is a broad audience, and of course it's written in English, which is, I'm very attentive and very aware of linguistic boundaries, and I don't know what to do with that yet and how to get beyond that boundary, but that's why I guess I use artistic mediums. So an English speaking audience, but I'm also looking at a general audience. So that's the trick in being able to speak to all these audiences. I don't know that I actually was able to do so, but that was my desire for sure.
And you talked already about VG UML and Archive. How did these two projects, I would say right now, help you to write Arabic Glitch in a way?
Wow. Well, I don't know how it would have been. It wouldn't have been Arabic Glitch without those two projects. So the way I envision, you know, we have, as artists and scholars, we have different methodologies. People use a variety of methodologies, and in scholarship, we even teach those methodologies, like, you know, ethnography as a methodology and archival historical practices. And so my methodology is one of practice, art practices. So in many ways, Vijay Om Amal and Arshiv were my research methods and my research itself, that was in and of itself also something that I produced, but it was a process. And that process was that process of conceiving of an Arabic speaking cyborg that's a mother and that's a Vijay as an agent and performing that subjectivity online and offline, because there's no digital divide. So being able to perform as Vijay Om Amal in all those spaces as one helped me think about the impact of the fact, helped me understand the erasure of any divides between what we do in these networked spheres and what we do in our embodied practices and real lives. So it helped me with that. And Arshiv, you know, it was a digital archive, but more in addition to being a digital archive, it was a digital archive and something that we created a series of cultural analytics and data visualizations. And we were able to use the archive to build software apps and tools, including some machine learning software in Arabic. So it was these were projects that were prolific and generative in many ways. And they were like sandboxes where I was able to play around with ideas, but really get my hands in on it and see if they worked and what happened. And then the ideas emerged afterwards, right? The book came out of those practices in many ways. So that's why I said, I didn't have the idea of the book first, right? I did this and then, some really important ideas came to my mind that I needed to communicate and learn things I learned along the way. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it interests me how you see yourself. Do you see yourself more as a scholar or more like an artist or both of them? So what would you describe yourself more?
Oh, you know, I don't, these things are not measurable in those ways. I can't do that this more than that. They both exist. They both exist very much, very strongly so. I think the ability to hold the idea, I guess, what's the word? You know, some people think of things as a pie, and if you take some out, you just have what's left. And I don't see that. I see abundant generative ways of being. I can hold both at the same time very well. And it makes sense to me. So I'm wholly artist and wholly scholar, something that we can conceive and understand.
In this ad for the Mobile One brand, I have 30 seconds to remind you about your first time driving. Remember the feeling, the freedom, how the world felt bigger and smaller at the same time? Because you were in the driver's seat. The truth is, driving never changed. You did. You got a job, a phone, and then a phone that was also a computer with emails that could find you anywhere, and then you were trapped. But here's the good news. It's never too late to break free. Mobile One, for the love of driving. Visit loveofdriving.us/radio to learn more. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.
Yes. And you write about some activists in the book as well. And which person inspired you the most while working on Arabic Glitch? And who are the most important persons for you that you talked about in the book?
Yeah, there's a whole community of them. There, you know, so if I go back, how I, you know, I think I've, my work has, my lens has been one through which I see politics everywhere. So the role of the activist to me seems something that we should all be, is a role that we all should inhabit, regardless of what else we do in our life, because our lives are so highly political. And I see that that's something that, like I said, I think that's something that we should all be doing. So, and I have, I guess, done actions since I was in high, you know, very young, at a very young age. So this has been with me for a long time. But in 2008, when I said, when I told you I wanted to, had the quite ambitious, I have to say, desire to archive the internet in Arabic, which is, you know, it was a smaller space back then. It really was. But it was an ambitious project. I turned to, at the time I went to, there's a platform called Drupal, and there were, it's an open source platform where you see the Arab get software to use Arabic online. Now, getting Arabic on an In the history of the internet in 2008, the internet was in English primarily, and many languages were not working on what we call the World Wide Web back then. And it was at that time when there was suddenly more languages appeared, because the computer works through, it sees characters, and then it translates that through encoded, through coding systems. And so English works, is encoded and decoded using ASCII. Arabic is encoded and decoded using UTF-8. These are two different coding systems, and they need to be incorporated in the computer. And that, those are just two languages, and there's all the languages in the world are done differently. Not all of them, but I mean, the, depending on the characters and depending on the semantic, the sort of more structure of the language. So back then, to archive the internet in Arabic meant that I had to work with the most up and coming tools. And so I reached out to an open source group of techies who ended up growing, turned out to also be highly political and were the involved with the Arab uprisings in various ways there on the streets. But this was 2008, and I was in I was in California, but I was in contact with Manel Bahiyeddin, who I would say perhaps maybe she's had the most impact on me. She's now, I think, in the UK doing her graduate work in feminist studies. She's a feminist. She's one of the strong, she's a superhero. She's my superhero. She's out there, batala, wearing a cape. She's a computer scientist from Ain Shams, I think is where, no, where is it? Cairo University. I can't remember, but she's a computer scientist, and she was involved with a lot of the Arab techies in Cairo. She was married to Ala Abdel Fattah, who is the prominent activist, blogger, and also a software programmer who has been imprisoned for many, many years. They have a son together named Khalid. And yeah, she's been involved in various ways, and again, to help build the open source community, build websites in Arabic, and really build a robust, vibrant community of culture that is online. And it was a really vibrant, exciting space, you know, to see such new ideas and also, you know, interactive media, creative work. It was just a very, it was like a renaissance of back then. And it was very short lived. Yeah. And there were many, many, many people involved. I just mentioned Manel. You asked me one name. But of course, this was a group of activists who we've still kept in touch and we're still close. And people have come and gone. Some have really, it's been now how many years? 13 years. And in this moment, I'm finding, and there's a new moment that we're living through right now between the genocide on the Palestinians by the Israelis, incited by October 7th, in addition to this, one will say, new generation of technology, machine learning and AI, which one could, ask, to what extent does the new technology impact the way in which these most recent attacks on Gaza have been so horrifically escalated at this level. This is next level. We are at another point. So
yes.
I just wonder, to what extent does the ideas of the book continue and have us make us think through the current moment?
Exactly. And while looking back at 2008 and now, how much do you think had the blogosphere changed, or the ways in which they worked?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it would be worth doing a sort of a new study of Substack. I think the platforms have changed. It's not really the technology or the platforms, it's the politics that's the most important, and the groups and the organizing people. The network sphere is not as networked. We have since gone through quite a bit of, in terms of, authoritarian regimes around the world, conservative movements rising here, everywhere, in addition to climate catastrophes, including COVID. And, here we are. So it's a very different time. And I think that's really what has changed, all of that. And when we talk about the blogosphere, I think there's still people, right? There's still so much, there's still prolific work out there to be archived. And I'm considering how to do that now. But the platforms, the people, they're in different places. It's no longer where it used to be. Twitter is now X. Facebook is sort of defunct. The blogosphere is now on Substack. What's Instagram and there's TikTok as well. So there's different things to look at. But I think it's vibrant. I think it's still vibrant, but we're also dealing with a time of silencing. And again, I think that the technology and the level of, the degree to which it is just so sophisticated right now. It's frightening in some ways.
And while researching and writing the book, what difficulties or challenges did you come across on a personal level?
Oh, I think the hardest was when writing the book in so much retrospect after, we had so much hope. I'm using that word very purposefully at the time. And there was such a denouement, it went up and then everything went down. There was such a counter revolution, such a conservative moment. I was writing in that period. And so that was perhaps the hardest, was to try to speak for something that was short lived give it in the broader history. I also have done work. I find myself more future looking and thinking about speculative futuring. So the fact that it was done over such a long period of time, over which so much change had happened, and I was writing after having done certain research, and so hence the conclusion ended a little bit differently. I mean, one doesn't write the conclusion until after the book is written anyhow, so you never know how that's going to look.
And coming to the last question, what are you working right now? Are you still working on Arabic Glitch in different forms, or are you working on a completely different project now?
No, I think I'm working on Arabic Glitch Next Level. Like there's a new archiving process I'm just beginning in terms of like Archive, Archive X. It's going to take some time to materialize. In terms of creative projects, I am working on a video game series called Data Bodies, which is speculative futuristic. Hopefully that more on that will come out next year. And I'm working on a new manuscript. I don't have a title, but definitely it's just continuing from where I left off, frankly. I needed to get that book out, but there's so much more to build on, especially given the current political moment, as well as, like I said, these new technologies, which, you know, if social media was generation three, where we were curating, where the platforms like Facebook and Twitter were curating human content, this generation of computational technology is generating our content. It was just curating content that we made. Now it's generating the content for us. That's the difference. But it's so, what I'm most concerned about is that I'm still, you know, the lessons, people have not even begun to understand the impact of social media. And now we have these new technologies, which are really sort of really build on it. Couldn't have existed without social media, yet people don't know what they're doing. They don't really understand. There's a lack of critical thinking. Yet there's these technologies, interactive media become colloquial in everyone's living rooms on everyone's multiple monitors. I mean, I already have two right here, three and four. I have four monitors right now. I mean, I'm one person and I only have two eyeballs. I mean, I don't know really if you think about it, it's something.
Yes. Thank you so much, Leila, for being on the podcast. And it was really interesting to get to know you and your work about Arabic Glitch. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. My pleasure. I appreciate it.